Radio. Catholic Radio Online. Now, if you haven't already heard, Catholic author and radio personality Patrick Madrid is on his way down under, thanks to the Catholic Adult Education Centre and Mustard Seed Bookshop. We were blessed to catch up with him recently ahead of his national tour. Have a listen.
Welcome, Patrick, to Cradio. I'm very excited to talk to you as you're heading out here very soon for a tour in Australia. Just wanted to ask you a bit of a background. What exactly do you do over in the United States and around the world for the Catholic Church?
Well, I do several different things. I chuckle because sometimes I wonder myself what exactly it is that I do. I primarily am an author. I write books on the Catholic faith, largely in the area of apologetics, although not all of my books have been about apologetics. Most of them are, though. I do a regular weekly radio program on the EWTN radio network. It's called Open Line. I do the Thursday show. And I also, I'm an adjunct professor of theology at Franciscan University in Steubenville. I'm sure many Catholics in Australia will be familiar with that excellent school here in Ohio. In addition to those things, I also run the Envoy Institute. And a large part of running the Envoy Institute has to do with conferences on important themes of the day, such as moral relativism, atheism, and the like. I publish Envoy magazine. And last, I guess you could say, is I do quite a bit of public speaking at parishes and seminars, conferences and the like, very similar to what I'll be doing in the next couple of weeks in Australia.
Okay, sounds like you're a very busy man. I just wanted to know, how exactly did you become an apologist? What brought you to that calling?
It was a very unusual and I would regard a providential series of things that happened to me. I was not born an apologist. I don't know anyone who is. I had a job in sales, and I was doing well in that job. I was married with a couple of small children at that time. And this now is in my mid-20s, and I had about a year-long conversion experience, reconversion to Jesus Christ. I was always Catholic. I had never left the Catholic Church. I was never tempted to leave the Catholic Church. In fact, I would have argued vociferously in defense of the Catholic Church if somebody had raised an argument against it. In fact, I got involved with an interest in apologetics from a young age, but I wasn't doing an apologetics as such. I was, as I say, I had this job in sales, and I had gone through this conversion experience, I believe, largely because several years, from my mid-teenage years going forward, I found myself, I guess I could say, sort of compartmentalized as a Catholic. I was definitely Catholic on paper. I was Catholic in many respects and going to Mass every Sunday and praying grace before meals and all of those things. But I also had a lot of selfish and egotistical attitudes and habits and things that stemmed from when I was a teenager and I learned how to play the bass guitar and I started playing with different rock and roll bands. And the better I got, the better the bands were that I would play with. And I had this ridiculous notion back in those days that I would be the next Paul McCartney. And I pursued that dream very vigorously. And, of course, with that lifestyle comes lots of things that are antithetical to the Christian life. You know, lots and lots of pretty girls and adulation and people, you know, sort of paying attention to you in a way that is not necessarily healthy for your spiritual life. And so I wound up being Catholic in some ways and not in others, if that makes sense. I don't think this would be an unfamiliar story for many Catholic men. And so as I grew into my mid-20s, all of this caught up with me, and I hope and pray that that was my midlife crisis. I haven't had one since, and I hope I never do. But it was very tumultuous internally. My sense of feeling that I was not living up to the standards that Christ had given to me, and I was not really being the man that Christ wanted me to be. I felt a great deal of repentance over that. And so this year-long conversion experience culminated in my going to my going to a Catholic church near my office on my lunch hour on work days, and I would make a holy hour, pray the rosary, and I would ask the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament to show me what he wanted me to do with my life. And after a good solid month of this, nothing seemed to materialize in the form of a sign, so I decided that I would take matters into my own hands. I guess I thought I would be like Simon Peter in the fishing boat, saying to the Lord, "Lord, if it's really you, call to me to come to you across the water." Mm-hmm. And so I decided to quit my job. So very abruptly one Friday, I quit my job, and I thought, well, surely the Lord will now show me what he wants me to do with my life. I was married, as I say, so I'm not referring to that aspect of my life. I'm referring to what I would do for my work. And I came home and told my lovely wife, who I'm still amazed didn't throw something at me when I told her that our sole source of income for house payment and putting food on the table was now gone. But she didn't react negatively. She trusted me. So the next day, Saturday, I got a call from a lawyer friend of mine who I had been friends with for some time, and he and I were both interested in apologetics. Both of us were very eager to do something in apologetics, he more so than I, because he was actually writing things and doing lectures and things like that. I was only getting started. And I told him about my situation and how I'd quit my job, and I asked him to pray for me. And he said, "Well, I can pray for you, but I can do something better than that." He said, "I'm going to close down my law practice. In fact, I've already closed it down, and I'm going to open a full-time Catholic apologetics organization. Why don't you join me and help me build this?" And I said, "No, whatever God has in store for me, it can't be that." I mean, it never entered my mind that this could be the answer to my prayer. But then, of course, my lovely wife very sweetly reminded me that I didn't have a job, so the best thing to do in this circumstance would be to at least temporarily help out. So I told my friend, "Okay, I'll help you out." And months and months later, it dawned on me this was the answer to my prayer. You see, that friend of mine was Carl Keating, and the organization he had just started, the full-time version anyway, was Catholic Answers. And so there I was, not at all expecting that would be the direction that God would turn my life. But in fact, when it was first presented to me, I said no. So that shows how thick my skull was in those days. But I did, in fact, discover rather quickly that this was the work that God had set out for me. So that's over 25 years ago now, and I've never looked back.
That's an amazing story, Pat. It's interesting the paths that the Lord takes us on. Just in regards to, you mentioned that you had a reconversion of sorts. I've noticed with your interest in publications previously that you do have quite an interest in conversion, aside from apologetics, conversion stories. Where do you think that interest in the story of conversion comes from?
Well, for me personally, my own personal interest, I think, derives from my fascination with not only major figures in the faith, St. Augustine, for example, mm-hmm. St. Paul, previously Saul of Tarsus, people like that. I'm struck by not only their conversions and the complexities surrounding them, but also I saw in myself something wonderful that happened that I can only attribute to God's grace. And even though my own little conversion experience was really nothing compared to those of people like St. Augustine, for me, it meant everything. And so I became not just fascinated by the mechanics of conversion, but also I wanted to become a student of the theology of conversion, the spiritual, and even the spiritual theology, the moral theology, and even the dogmatic theology of conversion. And I don't think I ever had a thematized way of looking at it. It just always interested me. So by about 1993, late 93, that's when I conceived of the idea to put together a book of conversion stories that would capture some of these amazing turnarounds that I not only had read about, but also that happened to people I knew personally. And I remember one day I was in the car on the way home from work at Catholic Answers, and I was thinking about how powerful and how effective and life-changing all these, at that time, audio tapes were, the audio tapes of conversions of Protestant ministers, people like Scott Hahn, for example, and others. And I was just reflecting idly as I was tootling along in traffic on the way home, and I was thinking about, gosh, it's just amazing how this is so popular. And then the thought entered my mind at that point. I said, well, wouldn't it be great to have a book that did that? And then I thought, well, no, there already are books like that. But then I realized there were books about conversion stories, C.S. Lewis's famous Surprised by Joy. There are many, many, and even he, who was not a Catholic, still captured the Catholic imagination, and many others of that genre. What I realized was largely missing from anything that was contemporary in that genre of book was anything that was apologetics in nature, apologetics being a defense of the faith. And so I thought, well, what if I could gather not just one person's story, but what if I could gather a compendium of different conversion testimonies and put them together in a single book? And I thought, well, it's worth a try. Maybe nobody would ever buy it, but I would find it interesting, so I'll just do it just for my own edification. So that started me down the path of what would become the first Surprised by Truth volume. There are three volumes in the series. And that was the first one. It came out in September of 1994. And that really kind of helped define and crystallize not only my own interest in the divine mechanics of conversion, but also I think it really sparked for many people, both here in the United States as well as in Australia and other countries, it sparked a renewed interest in discovering how God is reaching out with the grace of conversion to each one of us.
Yeah. So I see that the bulk of your work, besides looking at conversion, of course, is in apologetics, as you've mentioned. In the States, what's the situation there? Why is it that in the United States, a supposedly Christian country, that we see the need for the Catholic Church to defend the faith? Where are we defending the faith from exactly in reference to the United States?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know to what extent what I'm about to describe in any way describes the situation in Australia. I presume there are some similarities. But here in the United States, among other things, it is a complete free-for-all in terms of the media being open to religious and irreligious broadcasting, for example. You've got radio, television, the internet. There are just innumerable different isms, causes, movements, philosophies, worldviews, religions who are out there competing for people's attention. And it's been that way for quite a long time now. Catholic radio, for example, is only beginning to come into its own. There are now just a couple under 200 Catholic AM and FM radio stations in the United States. The expectations are, from what I hear, that number will double in the next 18 months, which I find very exciting. Wow. But to give you a sense of perspective, there are in excess of 2,500 Protestant radio stations. So that can give you a sense of perspective that the Catholic Church, even though we are 22% of the population per capita, it's still very much, we have a lot of catching up to do in terms of competing in that field. But when I say a free-for-all, what I mean is that here in the United States, religion is very much out in the open. People talk about it. Some of them argue about it. People do not shy away from that subject in public discourse here in the U.S. And for better or for worse, That means, of course, that not only are there opportunities for telling the truth, but also there are opportunities for defending the truth when it comes under attack from atheists or secularists or people who, in one way or another, whether they are doing it intentionally or unintentionally, and I'd like to think the latter is the more common situation, when they attack the truth. So the reason that we see such a proliferation and have seen this in the last 30 years, a proliferation of books, radio programs, CDs, websites, conferences, speaking tours. It's just very, very prevalent in the United States because I think that many Catholics have woken up to the fact that if they don't learn their faith and learn how to explain and, when necessary, to defend their faith, then that faith could very easily be taken from them, as we've seen so terribly with, you know, generations now of Catholics here in the United States who have fallen away from the faith because they didn't know it properly, it was never imparted to them, and therefore they became easy prey for people who came along with some other message that seemed good on the surface but was really antithetical to the truth. So that's one reason, by the way, that I feel so privileged and honored to be permitted by God to have some little role to play in this great drama, because, you know, this really is a life and death, and I'm talking about eternal life here, situation. And I don't know to what extent these things are true in Australia, but I would have to think that at least some of them are.
Yeah, I think that leads quite well into my next couple of questions. Just looking at here in Australia, some advice from you on the situation here. We kind of, in my own experience, have three distinct groups of people that we see attacks on the Catholic Church from, three quite different groups. One of them would probably be most familiar to you, especially because I believe at Theology on Tap, in a couple of weeks' time, you'll be addressing the godless delusion. But it's the atheists. They probably don't have a really sizable following here in Australia, but they're quite vocal. How would you suggest that us Australians defend the faith against this group of atheists who are often quite vitriolic and hostile towards especially the Catholic faith?
This is true. And I've seen that here in the United States. That's what makes that particular mission field more challenging than some of the others, and that is because there's always that temptation to fight fire with fire, which we have to not succumb to. And what I mean by that is that it is tempting to want to return the vitriol of atheists with vitriol from our side. We can't do that. And they will not play by the same rules we do. And what I mean by that is that we as Catholics have a duty to respond firmly, vigorously with facts, with rational evidence, but also at the same time with charity. And that's something that we can't expect from atheists. They can be polite, perhaps, but they have no motive impulse to be charitable. And so that has, in some respects, I believe that presents a drawback for us, but also it presents a strength, because by showing a Christ-like response to a vitriolic attack, that can have great power in the mind of somebody who is currently an atheist, who thinks that they have everything all figured out, and that if they shout louder than the other guy does, or if they use more put-down language, then somehow, if they imagine that that somehow helps them win a battle, by the Catholic being more restrained, more polite, more charitable, I think that at some deeper level that can identify for the atheist something that he himself doesn't have. And who knows, maybe that will become an open door for some of them. Atheists remind me, when I read books like Richard Dawkins' book, The Godless Delusion, I'm sorry, The God Delusion, my book is a riff on that. The book I co-authored with Kenneth Hensley, it's a riff on Richard Dawkins' book, and we call ours The Godless Delusion. But his book, The God Delusion, or the late Christopher Hitchens' book, God Is Not Great, Sam Harris's book, A Letter to a Christian Nation, other prominent books from prominent modern atheists that I have read, they all strike me very much in the same vein as the old story about the emperor with no clothes. Everybody went along with it because they were too afraid to say something. But finally, you had a little kid who stood up and said, hey, the emperor's got no clothes. And I think that there's something similar to that that we Catholics should learn. There's nothing whatsoever to be afraid of in terms of atheist arguments. Atheists are very good at hitting the bullseye on the wrong target. They can talk a great deal about the importance of science and the need for us to learn from science about the natural world around us, but none of those things have anything to do with whether or not God actually exists, all of Richard Dawkins' posturing notwithstanding. And Catholics, similarly, should not be the least bit shy or worried about engaging atheists on a purely rational level because, as we argue, in the book The Godless Delusion, atheism's worldview is simply incoherent. It is logically untenable. And so some of the things I'll be talking about in my talk, The Godless Delusion, will be an effort to point out what I regard to be some of those incoherencies and untenable positions. So I think with some basic knowledge and some basic historical information, but much more importantly, some rational ways of discussing the existence of God that do not depend upon divine revelation. You don't need the Bible to make your point adequately. You don't need to quote from a pope or a council or the catechism to make the points that I propose that Catholics make. Those are the kind of things that I think that we should begin with in our discussion with atheists.
Yeah. There's also, I guess, two other groups, possibly on the other end of the scale from the atheists here in Australia that we experience. One of which, I guess, is a bit of an artifact of Australian culture, where I guess stereotypically seen by other countries around the world as being a rather laid-back people. While I'm not sure that's exactly true or not with our work ethic, it certainly seems to be true in our approach to religion for a number of people. And we see this very, very strong sense of, well, if it doesn't affect me, then why matter? Why should I have to stand up for the faith? Why should I have to care about the Catholic Church? And this is something that has been seen quite recently with a lot of debate over here about this concept of gay marriage, where all these surveys have come out saying, oh, the vast majority of Australians don't believe that a marriage is simply between a man and a woman. And my own experience, I've seen that the majority of people who hold these positions don't really hold a very strong position about it, but rather are, well, it doesn't affect me, so why should I care? In light of this kind of character, this kind of attitude that we see here in Australia, how exactly do we evangelize to people who don't really want to listen to us?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are different ways that one could approach that. One that comes to mind as you're describing it, I would imagine that many Australians have heard of this statement that's attributed to a Protestant during the time of World War II. His last name was Niemüller, and he says this. He says, first, they came for the communists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. And he's speaking, of course, when he says they, he's referring to the Nazis. And his point is, I think, very apropos for our current circumstances. Sure, the sun is shining brightly outside, and there's food on the table, and there's beer in the refrigerator, and you've got a car to take you to work in the morning, and everything's right with the world, but not everything is right with the world. If we simply judge by these external appearances, we make a mistake in assuming that just because no one is harassing or bothering me right now, that things are not trending in a direction where that could actually become a possibility. And just as this German author that I just mentioned a moment ago pointed out, we, I think, have a natural tendency to be apathetic because it doesn't directly affect us. But what we fail to realize so often is that it does directly affect us, but only gradually. And our apathy now We will pay for that later. So when someone says, well, why should I defend the Catholic faith? If someone who's saying that to me is a Catholic, I would say, number one, because it's true. And the truth, by its own merits, it has its own intrinsic value to be defended. You know, if somebody were to be going around teaching other people that the earth was flat, or that 2 + 2 = 5, or that Mexicans are racially inferior, or some other such nonsense, I would feel a moral obligation to do what I could to disabuse people of those erroneous notions, not because it's going to make my life any better or any worse, but because people have a right to know the truth. And if they don't hear it from me, they may not hear it. So I think that's one reason. Another reason is because as Catholics, as Christians, we have an obligation before God to do whatever good we can with the opportunities and the time and the temperament that God has given to us to try to help other people out of love for God, not of love for our neighbor. So just in the same way as if you were crouched down in front of a building, poor, with nowhere to go, your clothes are in tatters, it's cold, you're hungry, you're homeless, and I come bustling out of the restaurant that you're sitting in front of, and I've got my arms loaded with freshly cooked, you know, warm packets of food, far more than I could possibly eat, and I come walking by, and I see you there, and don't stop, and don't help you, but just keep walking, and don't do a thing to help you, not only would you be unhappy about that, but anybody, I think, in their right mind with a heart would look at me and say, "What a jerk! What a selfish, unfeeling jerk!" Mm-hmm. Because he has what this other person needs. This other person is down, and is hungry, and is defenseless, and he has something that person needs. Excuse me, something that could help him. And look at him. He just goes merrily on his way and doesn't say or do a thing. And I think anybody who had that reaction would be entirely correct. There's something unjust about refusing to help another person, even if it's just out of apathy. And right now, there are a lot of people around us who need to hear the truth. And if we don't stand up and speak out on these matters, not in a haughty way, not in a condescending way or belligerent way, but we just tell the truth and do what we can to help other people, I would say in the intellectual sphere, certainly in the spiritual sphere, that's very much akin to feeding a hungry person. We're feeding them with knowledge. That's very important.
Yeah, that's very true. We also, finally, the third group that I wanted to ask you about, I believe is the most dangerous group, and that's our own Catholics. I guess fallen away Catholics, or not so much fallen away Catholics, but people who call themselves Catholic but act in dissent of the Catholic Church. A rather famous example here is our former Premier of the state of New South Wales, one of the states of Australia, Christina Keneally. Now, she's come out in public on a number of occasions saying that she supports, and I apologize for constantly bringing this up, but it's a big issue here at the moment, supporting this idea of legalizing gay marriage. Now, she's not simply talking against the church because she's dismissing the church. She's quite honest and sincere about it. And just to quote her, she says that, "Taking a contrary view to church teaching is not a position I come to lightly. It is formed by prayer, reading, and reflection." She believes that through a good conscience, she's come to this conclusion that marriage should be extended, I guess, in a civil sense, to homosexuals. People like Christina Keneally, I guess, show confusion or emit a confusion to people outside the Catholic Church, and especially in the Catholic Church, because we see, well, this is what the Catholic Church teaches, and here's what people who say they're Catholics believe. So what is it that Catholics believe? And this causes great scandal within the church and great difficulty for us Catholics. How exactly do we approach this, given that these people feel that they have very sincere points and yet are in open dissent with the church?
Right. Well, we have our share of Christina Keneally's here in the United States, to be sure. And some of them serve in high public office. And managed to do very much the same sort of damage. My thought on this point, without in any way minimizing or making any less important than it really is of the kind of problems that people like this cause. I would think that the answer, or let me start with the cause. The cause, I believe, is that the Catholic bishops, Catholic priests, to talk about one particular subset of the problem. Over the last 40 years, let's say until recently, Catholic bishops and Catholic priests, generally speaking, were afraid to speak out forcefully, publicly, on issues that are problematic, such as the one you just mentioned, abortion, contraception, things like that. And I suppose there were different motivations. Sometimes perhaps they didn't agree with the church's teaching, so they were just reticent. Other times they were afraid. Other times maybe they worried about losing the tax-exempt status or whatever it may be. I think there was a timidity that has caused a great deal of this problem. And it's like the old saying goes, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. And if you have a vacuum of silence when it comes to the appointed shepherds of the church who are not speaking out on these matters, someone is going to speak up on them and get the attention that, you know, is going to go in that direction because no one else is speaking out. So that's one subset. Another subset, I'm firmly convinced, and numerically this is a far larger one, and that is the failure of lay Catholics to know the faith well, to take it upon themselves to not be spoon-fed the Catholic faith like babies, but to be adults and to study the faith, know the faith, and at least make an effort to be articulate in their discussion of the faith in the workplace, in families, in their social circles. And I would say that far more often the real problem that gave rise to this other problem that you described with Christina Keneally and people like her is the is this timidity and laziness and apathy, whatever terms we want to use, that has engendered in Catholic lay people across the board a silence that has permitted this vacuum to grow, where these kind of dissenting Catholics get a they get attention only because no one else is speaking up on the matter. And now that there are stalwart bishops and certainly many priests who are beginning to do this, I would say hooray for that, but it's been so long in coming that this vacuum has built up quite strongly. And so we shouldn't expect that this is going to be an easy thing to counteract. It's not going to be easy. It's going to require a lot of sustained effort and a lot of prayer. The last thing I'll say is this. The easiest way, it seems to me, to deal with these kinds of misplaced, misguided beliefs is to explain what the church teaches and why. Not to be reactionary, but to simply say, this is the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is what we believe. This is what we are committed to. And we understand not everyone's going to agree with us, so be it. But it is inaccurate, and you know, ultimately it's distorting for somebody to say that she or he represents the Catholic Church as a Catholic individually who's saying something that's completely contrary to the Catholic Church's teaching. If only the teachings of the Catholic Church were adequately, clearly, and in a way that people can make sense of, if they were explained repeatedly, publicly, I think that a lot of the damage that people, such as the person you just mentioned, I think it could be dramatically mitigated.
Thank you very much for talking to me thus far. You've given us some great advice. Now, you're going to be heading down here on a tour very soon, from May 18th yes. to May the 31st. And I believe you'll be heading to Sydney, Brisbane, Wagga Wagga, and Melbourne. I just wanted to know, what else will you be doing with your time here? Will you be taking a bit of a holiday and seeing the sights around Australia?
Well, God willing, if I'm able to, I would certainly love to. I was in Sydney before, and I certainly fell in love with the city of Sydney. That's a tongue twister, isn't it? The beautiful, beautiful harbor and just the whole environs I find just incredibly striking. I've had two other speaking tours in Australia. However, the last one I did was, a good 15 years ago. So I'm looking very much forward to reacquainting myself with the cities in question here, including Melbourne and Adelaide. I believe I'll be in Adelaide and Brisbane. Okay. And the other places. In fact, I was very happy to see that the Archdiocese of Sydney sponsored a website. It's called Patrick Madrid Live, and all of the stops along the way are posted there with all the information on where and when and that sort of thing. So I would encourage people to take a look at patrickmadridlive.com and maybe plug into some of those events that would be near them.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be very excited to have you. And I'm definitely quite keen on seeing when you come out to Sydney around my way. Thank you very much for having a talk to me. And I hope everyone who's listening to us is just as excited as I am to see you when you're on your tour. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Luke. God bless you. And if anyone's interested in finding out more about me, they're probably listening to this, some of them saying, Patrick who? I never heard of him. if they want to know more information, my website is patrickmadrid.com. And my last name is just like the capital in Spain. In fact, I'm Spanish on my father's side. It's patrickmadrid.com.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Luke. God bless you.
Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.